Dr. Patel, you are the founder of Aura Wellness and the author of the book, The Glutathione Revolution. So welcome to Modern Healthspan, and thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you, Richard.
So thank you. So Dr. Patel, kind of to get started, can you provide some background on glutathione? So I believe you've been studying this, and this is the focus of Aura Wellness. So why glutathione, and why is it so important for us?
Okay, so it's like the what came first, chicken or the egg. The glutathione came first, and there came Aura Wellness, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because I'm also a pharmacist with a daytime job filling prescriptions and dealing with patients every single day till today. Mm-hmm. And my focus began 20 years ago when I was given the task to literally stabilize vitamin C in a liposomal technology. This was back 24 years ago. It was kind of a little bit relatively new technology at that point. And I was asked to do that part. And I said that why should I work on vitamin C, such a simple molecule for the antioxidant purposes? I think I should be working on glutathione. And so my curiosity started the venture. I said, you know what? While I'm getting paid to work on vitamin C, I'm going to start my own research on glutathione and see if there's an ability for me to stabilize this molecule in my laboratory. So that was the general purpose of me. I was not looking at anything beyond stabilization of the molecule, because the first step is to build a plane that can go to Mars. Once we get to Mars, we'll figure out what we're going to do next, right? So I didn't think about what I'm going to do next once I reach Mars. Same philosophy. I had no idea what I'm going to do with the molecule once I stabilize this in a room temperature in an aqueous-based solution, which is completely stable. So my research began just in the hope of just stabilizing, because it has never been done before. So I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but, you know, I'm a chemist's mind, and my goal was to create a stable molecule.
Right. So you now have, so glutathione is like an endogenous chemical that we have inside us. And it is very much related to, like, it has two major functions, right? Antioxidation and detoxification. Could you talk a little bit about what it's performing there, and why is it so important?
Absolutely. And so I had to put a second hat on after I stabilized the glutathione back in 07. I had to quickly figure out, okay, nobody's going to help me with the clinical outcomes of this molecule, so I could do all my research on my own. So I started digging back into the what's already been done and what needs to be retested and re-qualified again. And so you're right. So the glutathione has two major functions. Detoxification is one component that nobody talks about, because everybody talks about antioxidant because that's what it's been known for. And it is just one way of neutralizing free radicals, either electronically charged free radicals that you are exposed to from the environment, or your body's own chemical reaction producing those ROS species that needs to be neutralized in. So that's a primary function. It basically neutralizes by giving up an electron. And the good thing about that is the glutathione molecule becomes dormant, becomes oxidized molecule called GSSG molecule. Two glutathione molecules comes together, makes GSSG molecule, and the body recycles itself by giving more energy back to the GSSG molecule to react to become glutathione again. On the other side, when it conjugates with known chemicals or metabolites or something that's foreign to our human body, or something that is considered to be excreted from out of the system, it will conjugate with those molecules, and that's a one-way reaction. It'll conjugate them, make them into water soluble, and helps them clear through the kidneys or the feces, whichever way is preferred route. And so it has two major functions, right? Conjugation and elimination of known toxic chemicals and metabolites. They're not toxic when they begin with, but they become toxic once the job's done. And on the other hand, it neutralizes free radicals or reactive oxidative species to basically make them neutralized. So the body doesn't become any more dangerous than it already is.
Right. So it's called the master antioxidant. So why is that?
I get this question all the time, right? Why master antioxidant?
Hmm.
It's because it is the most abundant molecule produced by our body. It is the most available molecule to the body for the sole purpose of making sure the body never gets too much oxidative stress. And it's considered the master of antioxidant because all other antioxidant that we know of is actually regenerating glutathione from the GSSG molecule back to glutathione. So, for example, we think vitamin C is an antioxidant, but in reality is that vitamin C is actually providing the energy to restabilize the glutathione from the GSSG molecule, from the oxidized glutathione becomes reduced form of glutathione again. Because once that is finished, any excess vitamin C is actually a prooxidant, becomes a prooxidant. That's why if you look at vitamin C at low doses, it's an antioxidant. At high doses, it becomes a prooxidant. That's the main reason. You talk about vitamin E or any of the molecule that we know of, it's there to provide the charge back to the oxidized glutathione to make them revive again to become reduced form of glutathione. And hence, the term is master antioxidant because it's the mother of all antioxidant because it takes energy from everybody else and basically puts it back to use.
Right. So the one that's actually doing the antioxidation is glutathione, and then it's kind
Yes.
of using the others to turn itself from the oxidized back to the reduced form.
That's right. I mean,
Yeah.
even the sunlight, right? We even get the energy from the sun. The first few minutes of the sun rays is actually very beneficial to humans because it's providing the energy to revive all this glutathione back in the system. When it gets excess, then it basically burns your skin off.
Right.
Everything in moderation, right? Everything, even glutathione, everything in moderation is great for you.
Oh, actually, could you just talk a little bit about the structure of glutathione? What is glutathione actually made of?
Absolutely. So glutathione is made up of comprised of three amino acids: glycine, cysteine, and glutamic acid. So three amino acids comes in a proper sequence to make one tripeptide called glutathione. Okay, so the functions is dependent on these three amino acids coming together with two enzymatic processes into making this tripeptide. So it's not a protein because protein generally is a lot more. It's probably 40 amino acids or more considered as a protein. But this is actually a tripeptide.
So, where is glutathione? So we have glutathione inside us, like naturally, it's
Yes.
there. So
Yeah.
where is it made? Is it made in like in the liver or in all cells?
So it's produced intracellularly, in mitochondria. It's the most abundant organ that has glutathione is liver, and it's I'm we assuming that is because the liver does all the detoxification or the cleansing of your body. And so having enough glutathione in liver is probably warranted to help conjugate with all those toxic metabolites to in the process of elimination. So that's where it's produced the most. But glutathione is found in each and every cells in your body.
What regulates the levels of glutathione? I mean, and how much, and what depletes, what causes like depletion of glutathione?
That's a great question because knowing what gets rid of it, because there's only two ways to make sure they have optimum glutathione levels. One is if your body produces enough, or two, if you can reduce the usage of it. And that's how you regulate the levels of glutathione. So knowing what regulates or what can deplete the glutathione is very important because that's what's going to tell us that, hey, we got to work together with the depletion as well as supplementation to make sure that we have enough levels. So depletion comes from what causes oxidative stress, right? What causes too many reactions in the body? So overexposure to sunlight, overexposure to known chemicals that are toxic to a body, for example, alcohol. Alcohol will require a lot of glutathione to neutralize alcohol in order for your body to get rid of it. Chemicals, heavy metals, pesticides, fertilizers. There's so many chemicals that your body's exposed to. I think I read a survey someplace that by the time you wake up and leave your house in the morning for work, you're exposed to at least 70 different chemicals. And those 70 chemicals have to be somewhat neutralized and detoxified from your body. The word detoxify is kind of overused. I would probably rather say cleanse or eliminate is probably better because it just makes sense that that's what we're actually doing. But so the fact that we have all this exposure every single day tells us that our need for glutathione is always going to be there that much. And other thing is some people, some patients have genetic defect where they don't have the enzymes to process to make those three amino acids come together. So then they have this enzymatic defect or they have a genetic defect, they cannot produce glutathione naturally. And so they can show in risk kind of spectrum disorders as the body cannot detoxify themselves and they'll show all the signs and symptoms of either autism or Asperger's or one of those kinds of conditions. And then you also have medications that you take on a daily basis that may need glutathione to help them detoxify from your body. So there's multiple reasons why our body depletes the glutathione level, and there are very, very few reasons why the body needs to keep on producing more or can produce.
Right. So most of the methods you talked about for removing glutathione sounded like detoxification rather than the redox part.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And the other thing is, so can you talk a little bit about the GSSG and the GSH ratio? And is that measurable? And how
Yes.
would we think about that?
Okay. So if you think about measuring ratios, so most typical labs do not measure GSH because in order to measure GSH, you have to draw the blood, spin the blood, and actually put in the machines immediately to be measured the levels. Most people, what they do is they draw the blood, spin it, separate the red blood cells out from plasma, and send it out for lab for testings maybe a day or two later. By that time, everything's getting oxidized anyways. And so what most of the people are measuring is the GSSG molecule because the oxidized form of glutathione is what's being measured. And the theory is that GSH and GSSG molecule stays in somewhat equilibrium and making sure that you have somewhat about the same range. So if the GSH level kind of drops, the GSSG molecule with the help of other donors, electron donors, can go back to become GSH again. But so somebody start to stay within the equilibrium at all times. We test them at the university at on campus. And so on campus, we have all the equipments to measure the glutathione levels, the reduced form of glutathione immediately. Or the other option is you freeze them at minus 80 degrees Celsius, the blood, and then you send the blood out for testing. And so that we can preserve the glutathione as a reduced form.
Interesting. So in general, what you're measuring is just total glutathione, and you don't really know what the ratio is. Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Unless it's in the clinical trials that people do
Yeah.
where they will do all kinds of things like that.
Right. So what are the reference ranges that you're looking for in terms of kind of plasma glutathione? And do you think, like as a clinician, do you think that those are the optimal? Because it, you know, there's a lot of ranges like for glucose where people say, well, the optimal is this, but the actually accepted range is kind of wider. So do you
Yes.
have, what's your kind of opinion on glutathione?
Okay, so That's a great question, because we always look at the reference ranges as, is it really reference ranges for the laboratory or reference ranges for outcomes that we're looking for in our patients? And I honestly don't have a correct answer for that yet, but the reference range is between anywhere from 500 to about 1100 micromoles per liter in the blood, right? And I believe they're measuring the total glutathione, not just the reduced form of glutathione. And so the total glutathione levels from 500 to 1100 micromoles per liter, the goal is always going to be, can we get to 1000 or 1100? And it's very, very difficult to get to those range, unless you're a young patient that has very little exposure to toxins and environmental toxins and things like that. But typically, most of the patients that I've been dealing with and I've been working with, they're between the 500 to 600 micromoles per liter range, and some of them are below 400. And so, can I get them to optimum to see the outcomes that we are looking for? The answer is yes and no, right? Because the outcomes we are looking for may not be correlated to the levels of glutathione, but then what's bioavailable to the patients themselves at the time. Because glutathione has a very short life, has a very short half-life. So by the time you measure and does the job for you, it may be out of the system. So in my clinical experience that I have noticed is when we prescribe or when we give glutathione for patients working with physicians, we're looking for clinical outcomes in a known amount of time. And that known amount of time has actually helped me realize that an optimal source of glutathione can reduce the time of activity or disease management or symptoms management to a very small amount. For example, if you're thinking of, I said, hey, if glutathione is shown to help reduce triglycerides, for example, how long does it take, right? If it takes you 1 year, that's great. Okay, I can put people on 1 year. What form of glutathione? Versus if I can improve levels to intracellular levels or RBC levels or PBMC levels of glutathione, can I reduce the time from 1 year to 3 months or even less? And so my clinical experience is that by giving the proper form of glutathione, we are able to compress the time it takes to get the results you're looking for in your patients.
Yeah, and I certainly want to talk about like how to raise glutathione levels in a second. So when we're measuring, is the blood plasma level, right? Is that a good proxy? Because we need the glutathione in our cells, right? So is the blood marker a good proxy for what's in the cells?
That's the only thing we have right now. Not plasma. We don't measure in the plasma. The plasma has a very short life. Plasma glutathione level has a half-life of about 14 minutes. So you have no idea if it's on the peak, trough, where they are. So it's not a proper, accurate way to measure the glutathione levels. The RBC levels of glutathione has a half-life of about a day to 2 days. That might be a better way to measure the glutathione levels, because at least we know that the levels are stable for at least 24 to 48 hours. Is that the good indicator of what intracellular glutathione level is? I'm not sure. I don't know how else to measure glutathione levels in the tissue to see to predict what the outcomes are going to be. Now, keep in mind, there are some researchers out there, they are actually measuring glutathione with MRI. And by they have a frequency, they already figured out a frequency that it's a known frequency of knowing where glutathione level is and what organ and how much. And so they're using this technology right now to measure glutathione levels in your brain. And so I'm working with them right now. I'm trying to figure out that, hey, can I improve glutathione levels in your brain? Because how else are you going to measure brain levels of glutathione? There's no other way of doing it. And if it is possible, where in the brain is it getting? Is it going in the frontal lobe, subsessor nigra? Where is it, cerebellum? Where is actually glutathione traveling? Where is it going? So there'll be a lot of unanswered questions at this point. And so the question that you asked me earlier said, is this a true indication of measuring intracellular or tissue levels of glutathione? The answer is, I don't know as of yet. The research is out there. We're still working on it right now. And hopefully, in the next couple of years, we have some data coming out, at least on the brain side, that we can see that, hey, we're able to improve glutathione levels in the tissue levels, if possible. So.